Hi everyone, and welcome back to Not About the Weather after a very long hiatus for a various amount of reasons. We are here to try and hang out once more in the year of our Lord 2021 in a new presidential administration. So we're hoping that we can proceed as normal and frivolously talk about things that don't really matter in the real world without too much anxiety that what we're saying is going to be completely irrelative or insensitive by the time the episode is posted and edited. Frankly, that's why we've been gone. I'll get into that a bit more in a moment. If you've never heard us before, if you happen to be tuning in for the first time for season two of Not About the Weather, this is just a podcast about everything and nothing. We talk very deeply about things that don't necessarily matter on a grand scheme of things to the world, but things that we care about very much. Sometimes they might matter a grand scheme of the world, but the point is we go very intense about things to focus on, hence not about the weather. We skip the small stuff. This episode's host is myself, Natalie. We have Brittany, who is also here, and we have Karen, who is also here too. This podcast came from the bowels of my old podcast with Karen, Karen's old podcast with me, Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. So if anyone is still listening from that show, we are here. And if you're a particular Karen fan, we've got some good news for you. We hope that you're still here, even if it's three people, because I don't speak to anyone except the person I live with my actual mouth these days. I don't go outside. Nothing happens. So this is all I've got, just speaking into the void. How are you guys?
Great.
Yeah? You speak to a couple of people with your actual voice, or is it just Kristen?
I mean, it's mostly Kristen. I have a select number of people I talk to. My best friends live in Rhode Island. Mm. And, you know, we were always very close. But when the pandemic hit, it was like I couldn't fly to see them anymore. Mm. We talk like every day on the phone. We've spent like 12 hours on the phone playing video games and stuff. So this has, our friendship wasn't in any sort of jeopardy, but it actually has brought us closer together. So I do still use my voice on occasion with a selection number of people.
That's cool. Brittany, you do some Zooms, group chats, not just group chats, Zoom meetups and stuff with friends as well, I've heard about.
I do, but I do also live alone, so my TV is on the receiving end of most of my most of my commentary. But yeah, no, I do have some Zooms. I got to see some friends when it was nicer out at some big, like, you know, open space backdoor events. This was 2020 was unfortunately the year where my friend group turned 30. So there were no parties for anyone. But we made the best of it. And yeah, I get to see my family sometimes, but, I got to see one of my best friends get married. Even though it wasn't the wedding that she had planned or we had planned, but it was, you know, nice to just be able, she was able to do it outside. And it's good to like, I find that I get socially exhausted much faster now. And
I think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. I was even with my parents, like I spent 3 days with them after New Year's and the third morning, I was like fresh meat because they've been dealing with my siblings for a while. And so they were like talking to me nonstop the whole time. And it was fine. I loved every second of it. But the last morning that I was there, I was awake for like 4 hours before I left the room. And I kept thinking that the dog was going to rat me out because he could sense that I was awake in the room. And so he would like keep banging his head against the door trying to come in. And I'm like, I just need to recoup a little bit. Please don't make me go out there and talk to anyone. I just need a couple more hours. And so hopefully that'll be a good problem to have to overcome in the next year or two. So
I'm not looking forward to that because like I already have like social anxiety and stuff. So it's hard for me to like go out and interact with people and go to new places and stuff like that. And because I can get anything delivered to me now, because like I have an excuse not to go to restaurants and all this other like Ubering and stuff. I haven't done that in a year. And I was just starting to get good at that and not being nervous because I don't drive and not being nervous about doing that. And now I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow. And not only do I not like going to the doctor, but I'm going to have to Uber home. Kristen's going to take me there, but I have to Uber home. And it's just like this thing, this worm that's burrowing its way into my brain. And I'm like, I can't, like, it's been so long. I'm so out of practice.
Yeah, I definitely don't know how to behave in public. Ours isn't quite as bad. Like the virus situation here isn't quite as bad in Australia. But we were still acting like it was. That's probably why it's not as bad. But the point is, we did have a big lockdown, and I'm still like not really doing things for fun. I might be going to the cinema this afternoon because it's so hot. And I went to the cinema once in December, and I felt super nervous about it the whole time. There were like 7 people in the cinema. I was like looking over my shoulder the whole time. But I really want to see this film that I want to see in the cinemas, and I'm hoping it will be okay. Also, it's 38 degrees Celsius. And I want to go to air conditioning because my house isn't air conditioned. Air conditioning is not that common in houses here. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But, like, yeah, I just don't know how to, like, walk in crowds anymore or, like, regulate my voice or have, like, very low tolerance for, like, small talk or being, like I'm naturally, like, quite curt and, like, the without it being, like, any intention of being mean. Like just like interacting with people, like I'm very like short and not knowing how to like mingle, I guess, like to mingle, as well as the energy thing and fear as well. So that's cool. So anyway, it's a time now that we've had almost a year of this situation. And that's one of the reasons why we haven't recorded or not even haven't recorded, haven't released anything in 2020. Let me tell you guys, we did have episodes as well as some interviews that I had. Like I have content that I could post that was recorded in 2020, but it was like record something and then like the turnaround between recording and editing was like, you know, maybe a week, like, you know, sometimes, you know, it's not, you know, I'd like it to be less, but like sometimes, you know, if I was busy or whatever. And I was like, by the time that like I might have an episode ready, like the news would be so different and horrific that it was like, yeah, sometimes that the content of what we'd been saying was like, we did an episode that was about like the worst and not best things about the coronavirus, but like, you know, best things that we've seen people do because of lockdown, you know, like celebrity videos or whatever, and then like worst things about the lockdown.
I was trying to think of what we talked about.
By the time it was like ready to post, it was like not appropriate. Like it was like just not okay to post. And then May happened with George Floyd riots and just, I don't know if you've seen the news, but like it just things kept, Karen understands that now. But yeah, I found out that my friend Karen didn't know the John Mulaney horse in the hospital bit at all, until Joe Biden's inauguration. Like, literally, she never heard it. I was just so, it just, like, not to shame anyone, but I was like, how? Like, it's, like, A, I'm pretty sure that you like him, and B,
I do.
And B, like, it's just used, like, so much.
And I was doom scrolling all through 2020 on Twitter. How did I not come across this?
Well, anyway, goodbye, horses. So that's fine. It just never felt appropriate. And I will say, like, kudos to all the people that did keep creating content to distract people from the horror of 2020 because we needed it. But I could not be those people personally. And there was not enough energy to maintain doing that when it wasn't actually like my job. So I really hope that someone still cares, but like that's kind of what happened. I do have a couple of episodes. Like I've got like one interview, no, like two, maybe even three interviews. There's definitely one podcast episode with me, Brittany and Ariana that might still be like really fun. And there was no issue of it with timing. The content still exists. It was, and it was not really about like the news. It was just like when I was going to release it, like something horrible happened in the world. And I was like, this is insensitive. So I got very spooked. That episode involves like us talking about like Never Have I Ever, which like, remember that? That was great. That was like
that was so
15
great.
Years ago. Prodigal Son, Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Holland's bromance on Instagram. Wow. I feel like that one could be a cute like throwback to May last year or something like that. I don't think there's anything insensitive in it, but that one might be cool to still put out. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. You guys, it was a big year. It was a big and horrible year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we're hoping, I was kind of like, we just got to get through the inauguration. Yes. If no one bombs it, I'm pretty sure we're going to go back to like the news not being on fire. Things will still be bad and people still need to be like super aware of what the government is doing. This isn't even my government, but I think they're doing. I know more names of US senators and their reputation and behavior than I do of like Australian MPs, like members of parliament.
I will say on Inauguration Day, I talked to one person who was from my home country, pretty much like outside of a group chat in full of people who are like not currently in the country. Or like, Natalie was up through the whole inauguration.
I was. And I just, it was so sad. Like Liliana, my friend, she's American. She lives in Switzerland though. She was like, she watched like the final briefing with Trump. And she was like, I just needed to physically see him leave the building. Mm-hmm. And it was just so depressing. But then it was okay. And it's not like, you know, Joe Biden is not Captain America, but he's not Trump. And you can already be like, look, we're not having a meltdown about some totally crazy, cruel, unhinged thing. Yeah. Like, it's just no one's paying for golf. It's just like, it's great. Like, it's just, I don't want people to be complacent. I really don't. The Trump level news and the fact that, you know, maybe the corona stuff will turn a corner with someone who actually cares, actually trying to help people. We feel like we're strong enough to talk about silly shit again. Well, at least I do. It just felt like talking about anything that didn't matter as much as big stuff mattered was a jerk move. And I know that's not true. I know people do and did, and I don't begrudge them. I just couldn't do it. Anyway, here we are. If you want to listen, I hope if you're listening to this, you found the show. But the show lives on iTunes, Spotify. It's also on Stitcher, if that's a podcast app you like. You can contact us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. That's a contact that we have on Instagram and Facebook as well, but we are not using those right now. Perhaps I will. Let's see. It's our Gmail address as well, though, natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can email us if you want to say anything about any of our episodes. I actually checked our stats yesterday, and we are still getting, like, down every – like, in January, like, this January, we've had, like – 200 downloads, which is like someone is still listening to the show. Like, so that's nice. I really appreciate that. So people are still finding the show and listening to the show. 200 isn't big in the podcasting world, but it's big for me having not updated it in over a year. Spotify, iTunes, Twitter, Gmail is great. Our website with the full show notes, if you want to like read, or we'll link to anything that we reference if we happen to reference an article or a movie trailer or anything like that, we'll link to it there on notaboutthewetherpodcast.com. which you can also follow that as a Tumblr account and send us an ask. It's a Tumblr hosted website, and that is where you can find us if you want to say something to us at all. So how did that go, guys? Is it sounding normal, sounding like someone who amateur professional podcasts? I don't know.
We're getting back into the swing of things. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been so long since I've done a podcast. I'm just winging this whole thing.
Oh, look, that's the point, isn't it? I'm really I just want to talk about WandaVision. It's fine. No, we just want to talk about Karen's book. So the reason that, well, obviously Karen is part of the show and was part of Teen Wolf podcast and is a foundational person in our podcasting lives. But we have lots of people who like to come on this podcast, and she hasn't been able to do podcasting in quite a while. But the reason we wanted to make sure she was on our first episode of season two is because she has a new book coming out as an author, like a big deal author with her name on the cover of a very cool book. Second book in a series, and soon there'll be a third book in the series. I unfortunately have not read the book because my options for reading the book include Amazon Kindle store not making it available in my country and the printing of it not costing, like, the shipping of the printing costing like $50. So I'm going to have to find it in some way, or maybe have a physical copy sent to Brittany's house, because, yeah, it was the shipping to Australia. And then, but I don't know why it's not available in the Amazon store in Australia, but we can look into that later. But Brittany has read it, and Brittany is a big fan. And so I want you guys to tell me, as an author and a fan, about Cassie Quinn.
Don't laugh. It's your book. You're not selling this very well.
Yeah, it still feels weird. Look, this is not the first time I've written a book. This is not the first time my name has even been on a book. I've done things before. I've been a ghostwriter before. This should not be new to me, but it feels different, which I think is a good thing. It feels like mine, and it's something that I'm putting a lot of myself into, which is awesome, but also very scary. And I don't know why I'm scared, because everybody has been so supportive and so nice to me. And even the bad reviews make me laugh because they're so ridiculous. So it's going well.
It's got good reviews, though, like mainly.
Well, somebody was like, one star, this is nothing like Jack Reacher. And I was like, it's about a girl who sees ghosts. What makes you think it should be like Jack Reacher?
So this is a spin-off character from a book series that you edited or co-authored. Is that right? And was she a character that stood out to you and you wanted to say, hey, can I help you write a book about this character? Or was it the author's idea that he wanted more from that character, or what?
It was actually the author's idea. So for anybody who might not be familiar, I've been working with LT Ryan for quite a long time, for I think almost 9 years now.
Wow.
And he's been extremely instrumental in me coming to my own in my writing and my editing services. Like, he's sometimes, like, you know, his work paid the bills for me, and he's the kind of guy who doesn't take more than what he feels he's owed, and he really likes helping to, like, bring people along with him. And I'm very, very grateful that we found each other and everything. And he writes a series about a character named Jack Noble, and it's like a military political thriller
series. Is it like Jack Reacher?
Honestly, yeah, like a little bit like that. Which more confused, yeah. But yeah. He does very well. He is a big author. He makes a lot of Amazon sales. He knows what he's doing. He's got a great business-oriented mind for all of this, on top of being a fantastic writer. And it's been really cool for me to, like, just kind of go along for the ride and see how he does it and everything. And he wrote this other series about a character named Mitch Tanner, And in the Mitch Tanner series, he knows this girl named Cassie, who's a psychic, and she can see ghosts. She has visions and stuff like that. And she plays a big part in the second book. And I edited both of those books, and I enjoyed them. And he always had mentioned, like, you know, Cassie's such a different character, because that book isn't about ghosts or anything. Like,
yeah, that's what it's sounding like to me. I'm like, this is like an outlier, like, you know, something that maybe even in Jack's world you'd question if it was like legit. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole rest of the book is very cut and dry detective story. And then you bring in Cassie, and she's this weird kind of different element that works very well in the book, but doesn't necessarily have a full place in that series. And he was like, you know, I just really liked her. She's always stuck out to me. I really want to write, like, give her her own series, but he's got a million irons in the fire, and he doesn't necessarily have time to, like, do the whole thing himself, which is where the co-authoring thing came in. And he does this with a couple other authors as well. He's got Brian Shea, who does the Rachel Hatch series, which I love. I talk about that on Twitter all the time. It's really good. Gregory Scott does the Blake Breyer series. That's like a techno thriller. Mm-hmm. And so Lee, LT Ryan Lee, is doing this with a couple other people, and he knows how much I love fantasy and sci-fi and, like, the weird stuff. And he was like, do you want to help me write a series about Cassie? And I was like, boy, do I ever. Yes, I do. And that's kind of how that came together. And we gave it a shot, and we're doing it.
So you've got a first book out, and then the second book, has it come out already this week, or is it next week?
February 2nd.
Right, February 2nd, the book is released. So the first one is called
Path of Bones.
And the second one is called
Whisper of Bones.
And where can people find it?
On Amazon. Pretty much that's where it is. Digital books are obviously very easy. There are physical copies of the book as well. I actually got my author copies in the other day, and it got a little emotional. First time I'd ever held my own book in my hands. It's a very weird, surreal experience, but there are physical copies if you order them.
Cool. And Brittany, we'll obviously link the link to the existing book and the pre-order for book two in the show notes, but it's LT Ryan and KM Rort is on the cover, and it's a very pretty cover. Brittany has read the book, the first book. I don't know if you've sent her a secret second book.
No, she had me wait like everyone else.
Okay. Brittany, as a reader, pretending Karen's not here, how would you review Path of Bones?
Well, according to my 5-star non-biased Goodreads review, I would definitely stick with 5 out of 5 stars. I was honestly not expecting to be as into it as I was, given the subject matter. I'm not a huge, Natalie's going to make fun of me for this because of what I'm currently doing with her, but I'm not a huge, huge Supernatural fan. I'm currently watching the show Supernatural, but I am not a huge, like, it wouldn't be the first thing I pick up off a shelf. However, I am a diehard procedural fan, and this checked a lot of boxes for me. And I think that it just worked so well, and there was such a good balance of, you're not overwhelmed with the ghosts of the whole thing, but you're really diving into this character and her trauma and the lingering trauma and these people who know her and know her story and different tidbits and just how they interact with Cassie and what she's willing to give them on a given day, and watching her develop new relationships. And like I said, just even down to the basic procedural elements, I love an interrogation room scene, and Karen delivers on an interrogation room scene. I loved everything about it. And I read it in like one sitting. It was amazing.
I'm blushing.
I want to say the thing Brittany said to me. I don't know if it's like Brittany, if it's like too harsh, not harsh, but like, she was very much like, I really hoped that I was going to like it and not like have to just pretend to like it because it's Karen, if you know what I mean. Like, I think like everyone's kind of been there with that. She was like, I legitimately loved it. Like, and I was so happy because I didn't want to have to be like, good job, Karen, but like secretly, no, it's not for me. Yeah, you know, so, like.
So one of the things too, this book came out in November. I didn't read it till January. I downloaded it the day it came out. I was so excited and I literally could not open it until January. I was just so in my head about it. And then once I started it, it was so good. And I think that you just get, like, knowing Karen, you just get Karen in there. And if you go on Twitter and you read through her thread of pop culture references that she got in the book, like, you just feel Karen in the book. And that was particularly special to me as a reader because I know who's writing it. But yeah, I loved everything about it. I thought it was just so well done. The characters are so vivid. And I'm really glad that Karen gets to run away with Cassie because she's just such a great character. Even though Karen won't give me anything else about the character of Jason, fine, I can wait another week. he's so great.
So what does the day in the life of Cassie look like then? Like, also, is it in the third or the first person? Like, what's the setting? Like, how old is she? What's a day in the life of Cassie, really? Just quickly to give people like an impression of like what the story is, or like, rather than thematically, like what the story is or the reading experience. Like, either one of you can answer. I don't know, Karen, do you want to speak for her
Let me just wipe my tears away. That was very nice. There's a lot of imposter syndrome, and especially when you have to be like, guys, here's my book, and like all your friends are avid readers,
self-promotion,
you know, that they want to support you. And I'm like, you know, I came to terms, like, not being funny, I came to terms with my friends possibly not liking this book because, one, it's not going to be for everybody. And two, I did struggle a lot with the first one. I think the second one is a lot better. It's a lot, you know, just you kind of get into it in the second book where there's a lot of stuff to set up in the first one. And I was like, if everybody hates it, that's fine. Maybe they'll just give the second one a chance and then we can like start fresh. But everybody's been really nice. And so that's been awesome. So thank you. I appreciate it a lot. But yeah, so Cassie Quinn lives in Savannah, Georgia. She is in her mid-30s. She's a single woman who lives with her cat, Apollo, and she works at the Savannah Museum of Arts. She handles a lot of the art in the museum, and she prepares the exhibits and stuff. For people who know, I have a degree in art history, and that was one of the things that Lee and I had talked about right from the beginning, is wanting to incorporate that into this. So I got super pumped because I get to talk about art and write, and that's like my dream job. So let's go. And Cassie, about 10 years ago, almost died. A serial killer she kind of did kill her. And when she came back, she had these powers. And she could see ghosts, she could have visions, she just gets like weird vibes from things. And a day in the life is basically trying to, you know, she's worked through a lot of her trauma and stuff, but it still lingers. She has anxiety, she has PTSD, she struggles with things, but she's strong. And she goes to work and tries to, at least in the first book, ignore the ghosts and not let them drag her into their stories. And then, you know, eventually she gets wrapped up in it and somehow, and she works closely with the Savannah PD and her friend David, who's on the force. And she helps solve crimes and helps put these spirits to rest. And I think that I'm really glad that you liked it, Brittany, because of course I know how much you like procedurals and I had you in mind the entire time. And I was like, I want to make this, you and Caitlin especially, I wanted to make this a book that you guys would like. And Lee and I talked about it in the beginning. This is a mystery novel with a paranormal tinge to it. it's not meant to be hugely paranormal, but is obviously part of the plot because that's what she can see. So it's very difficult to balance the ghost stories and the actual murder parts because you don't want one to outweigh the other. But there's definitely more emphasis on the murder, I would say.
Yeah. And of course, we've seen a few television shows and things that have like a sort of similar premise in like that the official law enforcement have a contact with someone who has an ability and having to kind of cover up like the ability, like how they got the evidence or whatever, like if it comes into the case and, you know, yes, I got it from a ghost is kind of a difficult thing to say to like cops or like whatever like that. And I always like that kind of premise in things. So I really hope that I can force Amazon to sell it to me, honestly. and that's cute. And so, so Savannah Museum of Savannah, Georgia, in her 30s, is the style in first person, or does it change point of view? Is it with her the whole time? Third person close? What is it?
It is third person close. There are some POV chapters that jump to other people. Yeah. And, you know, we actually took a long time to discuss that because I was always taught when writing, like, you stick with one. And obviously, like, you can switch them up, but usually you try to do it in a way that's like very equal. And so I struggled that a little bit, but we kind of decided that in the first one, like getting a little bit from the murderer would be really creepy and kind of keep the thrill of it up in the beginning. And in the second one, we switch between her and somebody else major in the book. And I actually really like doing that now because I think it just adds an extra element to kind of keep things moving along. And I think it's going to work out pretty well.
And the other POV chapters start in third close as well, or is it like, or are they in first?
They're in third.
Yeah, I don't know, taught like it, you know, I'm sure there's something in it, but like I've read many books that have alternating third close points of view and they're perfectly good. Like I think that I really enjoy that. And actually one of the things that I enjoy like even the most about that is like the first few lines where you're like establishing whose point of view it is. Like, you know, if the first sentence has no weight to it in terms of point of view, and then, you know, you're seeing what character is involved and who's actually got the brain, who's got the internal brain in this scene. Mm-hmm. I love that. And one of my favorite series, The Raven Cycle, has got like a lot of alternating third close points of view, and it makes it much better. Like there's nothing that would have been. And I like that because sometimes, like, you know, you have information, the reader, that the protagonist doesn't have. You know something that someone else is thinking that the protagonist doesn't yet know. And I really like that element as well. So I think that's actually really cool. Especially with the murderer.
And I will say, when it does switch to the murderer, it gets like very big, like Thomas Harris vibes in Red Dragon, where it switches to the Red Dragon. And I was like very thoroughly creeped out, especially with this, like when you write the scene that's like where they're walking down the basement stairs with the bucket, I was so on edge, like not knowing what was going on, but knowing what was in the bucket, that I was just like, I don't want to read this. So it was like perfect because it got under my skin, but it was very much like Red Dragon vibes, like just watching those scenes play out. So
I think that's really cool. And it sounds very cinematic, like,
a great way to describe it. It was very cinematic. The detail was so great. Like you felt like you were like creeping through these woods and watching these things play out. And it's just so good.
That's very cool.
Thanks.
You okay? Do you want us to stop talking about you now?
It's just, it's a lot to take in. It's also weird because My brain is in book three right now. Like,
oh yeah,
book two is about to come out. It's getting wrapped up. It's almost done. And that's like what's fresh. And I'm like, do I even remember book one? What happened to book one? And so it's nice to come back to that. But yeah, it's weird how fast it all goes and how far ahead I have to be in terms of just like where my head is positioned and stuff.
I want to ask something that doesn't have to, if it's like not something you can answer or not something that you want to answer, we can cut it. But when you publish through Amazon, and I know a lot of people that make a very good dependent following that way, including like romance authors and like, yeah, crime, like people really actually do make that work. But like, if you wanted to sell these stories to like a major publisher for bookstores and stuff, is there like something, are you like bound by Amazon to not do that? Like who owns it? If you and Lee, like if you wanted to like query right. it, if you know what yeah. I mean, like, is that allowed or like?
It is allowed. I don't know exactly how it works, so this is kind of just me guessing and picking up what I know, but I don't think Amazon is just like the vehicle through which it's published.
They're not like, we own you now.
Right. Because technically Lee is also the publisher and so, you know, I signed a contract with him and yes. everything, and like says on there a whole bunch of language about, you know, what happens if things fall by the wayside and that sort of thing. And like, he owns the rights to it as a publisher. And then we also equally own the rights to it as authors. I know that Amazon, because Amazon has its own publishing company. And I think Thomas and Mercer is their thriller division, I think. Mm. And I know a bunch of people who self-publish their books, and then Amazon goes through and sees which ones are selling really well, and then they'll pick it up. And that happens all across the board with all different genres. They'll pick it up and say, hey, we'll publish this. And you'll see other self-published authors who get picked up by a major book publishing company, like a house, and, you know, they'll see, oh, they're doing very well selling this on their own, but we can give them an even wider audience and bigger marketing budgets, and we'll repackage it and resell it, and they'll be able to make more money that way and be traditionally published.
Mm. Yeah, I was mainly just curious whether they own you, like whether publishing through this means it, like, you couldn't publish elsewhere if it ever came up. Okay, yeah. That's cool. Well, we will share with everyone how they can get it. But basically, if you look up KM Rort and LT Ryan on Amazon, you should be able to find it. Karen, I noticed that you don't have a link to your pre-orders in your Twitter bio.
I don't. As your publicists, we would like to encourage you to do that.
Or even a pinned tweet. Your pinned tweet is for your last book, which is cool. Right. But you should change it to the pre-orders for the next one.
I should.
Your link in bio is to your Hyperbull page, which is still valid, but you can put it in the body of the bio. Your bio is very full. But either way, a pinned tweet would be great. That would be the best option.
True. Thanks, guys.
Anyway, so by the time you hear this, Karen will have an easy link for you to pre-order the books on her Twitter. And obviously you can get the first one, and then there's the second one coming out on the 2nd of February.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good. So Karen will be doing that. Yes. Okay. So we were going to have a regular conversation too, a regular chat as we do on Not About the Weather, in terms of our structure of the show, when we like to have a conversation about the things that we are loving and hating at the moment. The main body of the episode, our hypes and gripes. So an obsession to share and a grievance to air. What do we want to do first? How did we do this? Karen, let's do gripes first. Okay. And do you want to go first? Or,
sure.
Yeah, given that we're talking about your books
already. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't know, I own a lot of books. I own an obscene disgusting amount of books, probably over 500 or so, which in some cases might not be that many, but I live in a like small two-bedroom apartment. My roommate also owns a lot of books, but my books have taken over and asserted their dominance over her books. And the reason why I have so many books is because I'm head of the book department on Hypeable, and I get sent a lot of free books that I'm meant to review and do stuff with on Hypeable, which has slowed down so much during the pandemic. I cannot tell you how excited I was about that, but it's been a problem for years, and I get rid of at least half of the ones that come through the door, but I also get major authors and huge series, like very popular ones. And it's so hard to give them away. I donate them to our local library. And it's just really hard to sometimes. So I've had 5 bookshelves in here overflowing with books, like, you know, double stacked and all of that. And I decided I was going to take all of the bookshelves, all the books off of the bookshelves and organize them, see what I had, see if I happen to have any duplicates, and get rid of the ones that I know I'm never going to read and don't really need to hold on to, and try to cut down my book collection by half. And it's working so far. It is. But my gripe is that TARDISes aren't real, and I can't have one in my living room so that I can have as many books as I could possibly own.
I'm so sorry.
But I did get a Golden Girls cookbook out of this deal, so I'm not really
did. That is such a random thing. You got that is so strange. God, I mean, they made a Supernatural cookbook last year, or God, maybe that was 2019, which I still didn't get a physical copy of. They were meant to send me it, but it didn't matter. Brittany made pie for Dean without even needing a cookbook.
Listen, we don't need to talk about that.
I saw the tweet, and I was
several. There are several pie recipes in the cookbook. The Supernatural cookbook's really gorgeous, actually. But I obviously don't have this issue because I get offers of digital books, as do many of us. But Karen is the big name and gets the physical copies. Oh, I remember when I remember when Jen had your job, Karen, and I remember being in LA and her just like having like trunk full of like books to give to people in the car. Yeah. I think we were in like the parking lot at the Grove, maybe. And Jen was just like, books for you, book, here's the ones you wanted, like all her samples that she'd like carried to LA before Comic Con, and was just like getting rid of, like pushing books on people. So yeah, I mean, it is difficult. There's got to be something, you know, to do with it, and, you know, charities and stuff. It is a big thing. Maybe you could, like, start some anonymous book claim where you, like, you know, wrap it up in brown paper and...
Yeah. I've thought of so many ways to get rid of it. Right now we give them to the local library who sells them to just, like, fund the library and stuff, which I really love because that's important to me.
In their book fairs. And
yeah, I've been wanting to put together some boxes for, like, prisoners and the prison system and stuff like that. But that's also got a lot of restrictions, so I have to make sure I follow that to the T. And there's a lot of things that I can and will be doing with them, but it's just – it's very overwhelming sometimes.
I mean, obviously you want to keep the ones you actually care about. I have no idea how many books I have. I have a room that's meant to be for my books. Unfortunately, Leo's has been doing her government work from home in that room since we moved into this house. She's got a massive design computer that won't fit anywhere else except from the desk that's meant to be my library. So I haven't been able to get in there, and I just had to, like, throw all of the books into the shelves when we arrived. And, like, a few weeks later she got locked down from her job and they haven't gone back into the office yet, that's, like, a government job that has, like, security clearance. Like, not, like, in a, like, creepy way, but basically she has 2 computers in my library and I have not been able to sort my books since moving into my house in my room. And so that in my library of books. And I did give away about 200, and that sounds like so crazy, like 200, and it didn't even look like that many. They were all like thin, like small books, like middle grade. I had like all of these books from my childhood to a woman who wanted them for classroom reading. Like apparently the kids in her class don't like to go to the library. They only like her to give her them books in the classroom. I don't, but she wanted to get, and I had like all these old Goosebumps and like various things, and she wanted all of that. That was just from a Facebook group. And so it was a lot of boxes. It was like almost 200 small middle grade books. It did not seem to make a dent in the books in the room. I do have them all just on like one book per shelf now. I'm no longer on double layers. Karen, were you on double layers in the shelves?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the floor, like not even all of them were on shelves. It was awful.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you keep... Look, my opinion is keep, if your heart is like, I want it, keep it. Even if you haven't read it yet, if you feel like, I know I want to give it a chance, like don't be too harsh.
Yeah.
Then do it again. Maybe like even put a piece of paper inside the ones that you're not sure about, like a little colored paper, and be like, if I do this again in a year or even in 2 years and I haven't touched this book because the paper hasn't been removed, then... it can go, you know, if there's like some maybes. But I'm sorry that you can't keep them all, but I'm sure that there's a lot that you don't actually, it's different, you know, if people are sending them to you versus ones that you actually wanted to purchase for yourself.
Right. Yeah. And I will say, I am very grateful that, you know, I get to have all of these books, and I will be putting some on Twitter, like just ones that are either really good sets or like really fandom based things that I don't want to just give to the library. Like I know there are friends and people that follow me that would enjoy them. So I'll be putting a little thing on Twitter to give to people if they want to just pay for the shipping and stuff.
I have a bag of band t-shirts that I feel that way about, like that are too small. It's like, they're like merch for bands that I either purchased or was given. And it's like, I know that there are probably like teenage fans who have just discovered Fall Out Boy who want this vintage Fall Out Boy shirt. And not that I don't still have Fall Out Boy, it's just the shirt doesn't fit me anymore. But I don't know how to, like, I don't
how
even...
Do we,
I don't,
how do we reach the teens?
Like, that's the thing, like, how do I be like, hey, grandma's got some crack for you, you know? Like, I don't know how to... Like, and this has been, like a while. Like, I want them to go to people who are like, oh my God, it's so cool to have this vintage Fall Out Boy shirt, or like, oh, this, you know, whatever. I mean, it's not vintage, it's from fucking 2006, but you know what I mean? Like, because, yeah, the teens are discovering like a lot of those older bands. That, again, they're not older. they're discovering the bands that were like, I've seen, like, a lot of people being like, ah, I wish I was alive in 2005. The peak of music. Oh, I'm like, God. Oh, my God. But the point is, I genuinely want people like that to take my shirts. And I don't know how to find them. So...
All the kids are on TikTok these days, so you got to make a TikTok.
I'm not making a TikTok.
I know. I literally have no idea how to talk to my niece who's turning 16 in a couple weeks. I just, like, I mean, I text her and it's fine, but, like, she has, like, no social media presence, whereas I'm like, these kids are definitely, they're online all the time, and I'm like, I don't know where, though. Like, I have no idea where she is.
I think they're still on Tumblr and TikTok. I've got some thoughts about the kids that are not very generous, so I won't even start on that. Basically, it can be summed up as in, like, they seem to be acting like everything they like is temporary. Like, they're aware that everything they like is temporary, and they're already jaded about it. And that kind of makes me sad, but that's a whole, like, I don't know anyone personally that age except for my niece in Israel who, you know, is very cool, actually, but... I haven't had this conversation with her, but from what I've experienced in fandom lately, there's some people between the ages of like 16 and 21 who think that people still involved in fandom are very old and stupid, and that are like, oh my God, if I'm still caring about this when I'm 25, kill me. And I'm like, that's very sad to me. I understand that's like probably true for a lot of teens. Like they think, oh my God, I will never love anything more than Nick Carter, ever. But then they don't. But the attitude of like, oh my God, so embarrassing that you're on social media when you're 30 or something is like, okay. And I don't want to like actually get into that because it's something very confusing to me, but I do want them to take my shirts. So come to
so
me.
If you know how to get in touch with the teens, let us know. Yeah. We have some merch for them.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. So that kind of went in a funny direction, but I wish you luck, Karen, and I'll look out for all of your books. I wish that it was easy to get books from you because I bet you've got some like aunt books or coffee table books that I would be keen on.
Well, yeah. Just send them to me.
Send them to Brittany.
I'll add them to my Natalie pile. Natalie's like it's slowly taking up a closet at my house with all the stuff I have for her.
Oh, look, it should have been, you know, I should have seen you like twice last year.
Yeah,
but
I know. So Natalie convinced me finally to read The Raven Cycle during the beginning of lockdown. And luckily she had two copies of the first book in the spinoff series. So I was just like, Natalie, I'm just going to go into your box of things that I have and read a copy of this book.
That was you can definitely keep one because that was actually, speaking of like book orders, that was one of the strangest ones I've ever had. I pre-ordered the copy of the,
Call Down the Hawk.
Yeah, of Call Down the Hawk, so the Raven King sequel. And I pre-ordered it from Books of Wonder, actually, because I wanted this copy with the book plate that she drew. And anyway, I ordered it to Brittany's house. All my copies of the Raven Cycle are the American pressings, and I wanted them to match. And then the publisher or her PR person contacts me and was like, Maggie knows you're a big fan and would like to send you a free copy of the book. And I'm like, what? Like, how is this normal? Like, I don't talk to this woman. I don't know this. I follow her on Twitter and, you know, love her. But I'm like, this isn't a review copy. This is like, she's like, no, a finished copy. She just, like, we just want to give you the book for free. And I was like, I've never reviewed this series for Hyperball. I don't know why. Did I say something one time that she was like, you get it, put her on the list of people that gets it.
I mean, that happens sometimes.
I was so confused. Anyway, the point, that's why I've got two copies at Brittany's, because the publisher sent, I was like, okay, yeah, thank you very much. That's very nice. I think there was a note in it from the publisher. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they just wanted to give me a gratis copy of the book. And I was like,
that's
okay.
That's the one I read because it didn't have the book plate.
I was like, thank you very much. You can keep that copy, Brittany, I think. It was very strange, very nice. I was very confused. But, yeah, does that happen, Karen, that people are just like, hey, we've stalked you?
Yeah. I mean, usually, like, not super common, I would say. I'm sure that it probably has something to do with you being attached to Hyperball because that kind of amplifies your voice a little bit more and stuff. I don't think I sent anybody in your direction.
It was a Twitter DM. I was I was like, yes, please. But I was so confused. It was weird. I don't know. Maybe the publisher is like, I know a couple of publishers follow me who are like fandomy, like they happen to be in publishing, but they're also fandomy. Anyway, never mind. This is very off track, but it was strange, but good.
I have about six of her books that I came across yesterday that I kept. I kept all of them. So I will be reading them at some point, including the entire Raven Cycle series.
And yeah, I think you'll like The Scorpio Races, if you've got that one.
I do have that one, yeah.
I feel like that one might be the most interesting to you. I think the Raven Cycle is really great and has that alternating point of view, which I think is used really well. And The Raven Cycle is a book that is a series that's very, like, patternistic. Like, I say repetitive, but not in, like, a bad way. But it's got, like, a cadence to it that's got, like, throwbacks and, like, it's kind of, like, better the second time around because you like catch the planted patterns of even just like dialogue and phrasing that's like makes it a bit like sing a bit. But the point of view matters for those series. So that one is I think a really good example of that alternating, and I'm very pro that for Cassie. So I'm keen to see that. Okay, so Brittany, your gripe and my gripe are kind of in opposition, not in opposition, but they're like not unrelated in terms of topics. So which one would flow better into which? Do you want to go?
We could do mine into yours because it's a transition from book to TV.
I think do that. Your gripe. Yeah, I think you should do yours now.
Okay, I can do that. Cool. So my gripe is about a book series being turned into a TV series, and in particular, me not reading the book first, which is like kind of against sometimes what I like to do a little bit, but I was just aching for something new. And so I dove into Bridgerton without reading the books first. And there are lots of books. They are very much follow the romance series where you're given a family and each book is about a certain member of said family. My hype is also kind of related to this, but not Bridgerton, but same style of writing. So the first book, obviously, The Duke and I, was adapted into the first season of the smash hit Bridgerton, which costume drama, sign me up. I don't need to know anything else about it. I'll just watch it. And going into it, did not know about a couple of particular plot points. And I think that having known about a couple of particular plot points would have colored how I watched the series. But because, again, it was a period drama, it came out on Christmas, a Christmas where I was not really with my family and was kind of just like down in the dumps. I just wrote it right into it and watched it in one sitting. So there was no time for that internet instant feedback. And I'll start with a couple of good things and then I'll get into the bad things. So finished Bridgerton and instantly was like, you know what? Who is the second book about? And it's about one of the brothers, Anthony. And reading his book completely colored the series for me in a new way, which was good because I did not like his character in the series. And now I will lay down my life for this sad, sad boy who just deserves everything good in the world. And there's a character that's going to be in season 2, which has already been greenlit by the network streaming conglomerate.
Whatever.
Network's a bit of an understatement.
Network flicks.
Yeah, network flicks. So I love him so much and I'm very excited to see his story. And there's nothing bad in his story, so that's great. But another brother, Benedict, one of my gripes with Bridgerton was, you know, it's being lauded as like very diverse and inclusive, and that's great. It was. However, they just didn't make anyone gay enough for me, and they had the opportunity to, and Benedict in the series is straight. He, you know, follows the same pattern of society, falls in love with a girl, gets married, blah, blah, blah. In the series, however, they need to make him gay because I think it just fits his character so well. They really set it up, but they didn't drive the point home enough, and it kind of just like made me frustrated, even not knowing that, you know, nothing about the book series or anything, just not knowing if he was queer in the books or whatnot, but he apparently isn't at all. But the series just didn't take that far enough, and I really hope that it does when it comes back. So that's a plot change that I feel like they have the power to make and maybe have sort of started to lay the groundwork to do so. There is a moment in the book and the TV series where they didn't take any of those liberties. And I think that they 100% should have. And it involves, just so to put this out there, if this is a trigger for anyone, it involves a sexual assault that happens in the book and on screen. And it's just very not well done and translated from what I have read in the book and on screen. So basically, the two lead characters are having sex and, you know, the woman finds out that basically her husband, because she's naive and young and a polite woman in society, does not really have a full concept of how babies are made when she gets married at a young age, doesn't realize that her husband is pulling out because he doesn't want to have a kid. Not that he can't have a kid, but doesn't want to have a kid. He wants his bloodline to end. And she figures this out, realizes how babies are made, and what she does is she basically straddles him and does not let him pull out. And so, because she wants to be pregnant and sort of catch him in this lie and make him pay for it. So they never really deal with the fallout of this. It's just sort of like they're mad at each other for a couple of episodes. And then she's like, I just didn't understand about your past. And he's like, well, I'm sorry. And that's it. Like, it's just not, it's not well done. If you're going to keep that, do something with it. And the series just didn't. So it just bugged me, having sat there and been so excited and so into the chemistry and so into a lot of the stuff that was going on, that by the time these two got married and you still have a couple of episodes left, you're sort of left wanting to see the rest of the family. Like, oh, okay, these two reached a pinnacle. And now, like, this is a series about an ensemble. There's so many people going on. There's a mystery. And it's very interesting. But at the same time, it's like they stuck with the narrative that went in a direction that's not great, and sort of just left everybody else to the wayside when they had something better there. So that's my gripe. I didn't like the way it was done, but I loved so much about it. And it's just such a sour note on something that I was really hoping to enjoy in these hell times.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. Karen, have you watched it? It doesn't really seem like your thing. Not enough explosions.
Yeah, I mean,
there are fireworks. What? There's a whole scene with fireworks.
So I haven't watched it. When I saw it coming out and I saw the whole kind of what it was about and how it was being handled, I was super into the idea of it because I also like historical stuff. So I wouldn't say that it's like not my thing, but also not the first thing I would gravitate toward. Obviously very up Kristen's alley.
She read the books before it came out. She didn't know it.
No, she did what Brittany did basically and just jumped right into it. And she watched it, and I caught bits and pieces of it while she was watching it. And I have to say, it looked very good. Like, I would kind of stop in the hallway and like peek into the living room and watch a couple of minutes of it and be like, okay, I can't be a creeper. I have to go back doing whatever I was doing. But when that thing happened and the internet was kind of talking about it, I didn't know exactly what it was, but I had an idea of what it was. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, this does make me not want to watch it now.
Yeah.
Because it just felt very like dissatisfying how they ended up handling it, which is a bummer because I think for what it is, like, it could have been, and I think it still is, obviously, like, it has a lot of merits as a television show, but I also feel a little bit soured on the idea of watching it because it sounds like it just wasn't handled correctly.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it and was vaguely aware it was booked, didn't really get it. Like, there's some things where I'm like, oh, I want to read the book first or whatever. In this case, like, I don't care. I used to be more of a pedant about that kind of stuff, and I'd definitely read the book if I liked something, but I'm not the pedant about that I could be, especially for stuff like this that I want to watch for, like, sheer fun.
Yeah.
But very much my thing. Was very much looking forward to watching it. Was not able to watch it on Christmas Day when it came out. And basically here is what I saw happen from, like, maybe 10 different people in my feed. All different people, like Ariana, my friend Jen, like, just all of these people live tweeting basically, I love Bridgerton, so good, so beautiful, like, just costumes, I love this character, I love this character, like, live tweeting, just total, my brain is blissed out. And then, like, a total record scratch, like, excuse me, what? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone I saw watch it live, like, before the news circulated, not live, I mean, it's live, you know what I mean, everyone I saw watch it really fresh was totally thrown off by this And that made me feel like really strange about it. And then I started reading a bunch of articles. What it looks like to me, and I talked to Brittany about this, and I talked to my friend Megan about this, who is very into period dramas and very, also like very kind of like quote unquote woke. I don't know how I feel about the word woke anymore, but she's like someone who like doesn't want to get involved with things that have any nastiness or, you know, like that in them. And like, she's very, very ant. She would not let something like that slide usually. And I was like, you didn't like, how did this go for you? And she was like, honestly, my friend Megan was like, honestly, I was so caught up in it by then that I didn't really think about it. Like, I binged it all in a day. But the issue with it is that no one in the show, on or off screen, seems to think that like what the girl did was that bad. Like, no one, like, that we're not narratively being told that it's like that bad, if you know what I mean. Like, people's reactions to it are harsher and more, this is not me defending it, by the way, this is me saying this is a problem. People's reactions to it are like, this is horrible, but the show is not narratively saying this is horrible. It's saying it's a bit wrong, but it's very easily forgiven. Thank God the girl does not get pregnant from this incident. She, like, if it had, it would have been, like, super dodgy. His reluctance to have children is because of his, like, trauma. You know, apparently this is a society where he doesn't feel like he can explain that he can't have children because of his emotional issues, not that he can't have children because he's physically broken. And I believe that people not wanting to pass their DNA on is valid as well. Like, a lot of people with like hereditary mental illness are really reluctant to have children for that reason. His was a little bit more spite-based, but it also came from trauma, as far as I know. What was it we were saying, Brittany, that it was like the show doesn't seem to know that it's that bad? Like, the show doesn't seem to think it's that much of a problem, and like, it's not painted as this big villain moment. And yes, there's like people are, you know, saying, well, he's just as bad because he lied to her, and therefore like it's coercive.
Yeah. And I think a lot of,
and I don't think that's quite accurate, given that I thought that when they got married he said he can't, like, she'd accepted that he couldn't have children. He said, I can't have children, and she was like, that's okay. But then she realized that it was a choice, and then she got mad,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that what I'm taking away from it, and I don't know, I'm not putting words in like the actors' mouths or even the creative teams, but I feel like they're trying to chalk it up to, well, this isn't happening in modern times, so we get a bit of a pass. And like, yeah, if you tried to pull that plot line out in a 2020 setting, you're damn right you would get blowback. But like, I feel like they are breaking all these other rules, like not even rules, but just like trying to be progressive. Yeah. Trying to be progressive and like, you know, oh, we're not only showing white people, like look at, you know, how this lineage could actually have looked like. And, you know, all of this stuff that they're claiming to be groundbreaking. But then I feel like this plot line, they're sort of just like, well, you know, he wouldn't talk about it because that's just the time.
Apparently it wasn't quite as bad as in the books, but I was still very like,
but if you're changing it, why not?
Yeah, that's the thing. It was, yeah, like, yeah, that's, I don't know how they could have got to the same place, even maybe, to be very frank, it was like she was on top of him and like forced him to stay inside and impregnate her, except yeah, that she doesn't get pregnant from this. It's
like not weak physically. Yeah. Either.
I mean, but, you know, physically pulling her off would have been one thing, but I feel like they could have made it into an accident, like as in like he can't get her off in time, like, you know, like, and her not being aware, not being something she's doing on purpose. I don't know how that would have created the knock-on effect for their fight and stuff. It could have just been more emotionally based, like I didn't know and stuff like that. But it is, you know, I don't know why they thought that that was like okay. Like, I don't want to like rank anyone's sexual assault experiences on a scale of 1 to 10, but obviously there are worse and more violent things that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're still pretty bad at recognizing men being sexually assaulted, and forced impregnation is a really big part of men's sexual assault. And I actually know someone it happened to. I don't like the guy that it happened to, but it's still bad that it happened to him. Not, you know, whether it's unknowing, like someone's not on birth control and say they are, or or something like this. It's a real thing. And yeah, I guess, like, I just don't know. I don't know what they could have done with it to keep the bones of the plot but change the skin of it.
And like, I definitely do not have an answer for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not something I'm like actively going to spend my time doing, but I do question the conversations that had to have taken place to still just let that be and keep it for what, like, what end goal? Like, what was worse that was pitched than what was produced?
Yeah.
Basically is where my head goes. It's like, if that was what you came out of the bargain with, then what else was on the table?
Yeah, and I might want to, it's not the fact that it was included. For me, it's not the fact that it was included.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have, and I might still watch it, but it was what put me off was that it was, so it sounded like it was like not being treated like it was that villainous. Yeah. Like if it had been happened and people were like, that's so wrong of you. You're such a bad girl. You should be ashamed. You know, that's coercive, you know, like obviously the attitude at the time is a man has the right to have children with his husband or wrong.
That's not gonna happen.
A man has the right to have children and, you know, should want that, and you know obviously not a lot of people understood his point of view as to why he didn't feel like he could have children, but it's kind of like, oh, they're I'll get over it. We can have a baby anyway. And I was just like, she needs to be more punished.
Yeah, the resolution was just like, it's like, raining and now we've made up because we realize that this fight is getting us nowhere.
And, you know, yeah, and obviously that those characters, like their plot is no longer like the scandal. And so next season it'll be a totally different scandal and they'll be in the background.
So
but I don't know. I'm interested for, you know, people's opinions on this, but I just was very, very much seeing like this timeline full of people going, yay, Bridgerton, yay, Bridgerton, yay, Bridgerton. And then all being like, oh.
Yeah. And it was kind of the reaction, like, even
not good. Yeah.
So like even watching it and it not really hitting until what you were done, sort of like what Megan was saying. It's like, oh, well, I was in the middle of a binge. And then when the dust clears, you know, and you get out of your pile of snacks you've accumulated by watching 8 hours of a show in one sitting, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't exactly feel okay with what I just finished watching.
Yeah. And I guess like this, and I've seen quite a few articles about it, even from like the romance community, because I did a bit of a deep dive about it, honestly. I got like something I had not seen because I don't know, I just can't be stopped with my curiosity. I think even in the book there was some criticisms, like reviews and romance writers and stuff. There was some criticism of that when the book was published. So I don't know. Maybe they've talked about it in a way that, you know, if anyone's got an interview where they're like defending it in a way that I might understand, sure, let's have a look. But it was very confusing to me that they would just do that and treat it like it wasn't a big deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I just felt very dissatisfied with how it was handled.
Yeah.
And like I said, just the couldn't follow the logic of how we got there and how the payoff seemed worth it in the room for how then it was played on TV. But one review that I did see afterwards mentioned the phrase, you know, Anthony, you have no idea the storm that's coming for you. So I was like, well, guess I'm reading Anthony's book now because I need to know how he gets whipped into shape. And definitely worth it, and very much looking forward to his series.
Well, that's good.
There is a very terrifying scene in that book, though. Holy crap. It happens in a flashback. And I was like, if I thought that the murderer point of view book chapters of Karen's story were bad, there is like Normally, there's not, like, it's hard to have a jump scare in a book. This is a jump scare in a book, and I did not expect it to, go.
Was it about a clown?
No. That would have been worse.
Curious about that. But anyway, I guess, you know, I still kind of want to watch it, but I've got this lens of it, and, yeah, definitely really odd feeling about it. But there are other characters, I guess, that might be good, and we'll see. Yeah, so if you've watched Bridgerton and have thoughts on that, please share, because, yeah, it was quite an interesting moment to witness in the cultural zeitgeist, but there you go. I'm going to do my gripe now, which is actually semi-quarter related to this, because Bridgerton is a book adaptation, and my gripe is about television being basically scared or not trusting original IP, intellectual property. It hit me recently how little, like every single year, there are less and less TV shows getting greenlit that are not in some way an adaptation or related to a brand that already exists. There's stuff like Bridgerton, which was a book series, which the brand didn't really matter. Like, people were not watching it because they were super fans of Bridgerton. Most people wouldn't have read the books. And then there's stuff like The Mandalorian, which obviously people are watching because it's in the Star Wars universe. You know, the stuff like the new show Walker, which, aside from other issues that I have with it, is like adaptation of an old famous TV series, a reboot. And I just want to say, like, I do not have an issue with adaptations at all. I love many of them. You know, I love pretty much everything. Like, I love adaptations. I love stuff in an extended universe. You know, my hype is about something in an extended universe. It's not that my issue is with the idea of adapting something. I'm sure that we'd all love a Cassie Quinn TV series.
One day.
The issue, I want to like say that like three times. The issue I have is not with adapting things. My issue is the fact that people, whether that's networks, marketing teams, even creators, there is a dwindling trust in original IP. Like there is, you know, my complaint is not, oh, there are no new ideas and everything has to be a reboot. I think there are new ideas. I just think that there's somewhere they're getting stopped and they're saying, well, we could spend a ton and energy trying to sell people on this brand new brand, or we could do something that people already know and save ourselves like a third of the work or half the work of like name recognition and making people pay attention. And when I say like, I get it. I get why having a brand, an existing brand to attach to a brand new show is like a powerful thing. And like most of the shows that I watch are adaptations and most of my favorite shows are adaptations. But it makes me sad that there is such a lack of trust in trying to push a new story. And I was talking about this on Twitter the other day, and I've got I was asking people like their favorite IP, like a favorite show that's like a brand new story. And let me tell you like where it does happen. It happens in comedy, in half-hour comedy. That's not usually a reboot. That's usually an original idea. It happens on streaming a bit. So like, yeah, like there's a good amount of streaming content that's an original brand new show. It's usually like, again, like a comedy or like the straight drama. But streamers will go a bit more creative with a newly developed idea. And it happens in like the UK or Canada public access TV, like BBC or CBC, you know, your Schitt's Creek, Letterkenny, Fleabag, you know, like all, though that was kind of, she had that as a play first. BBC's actually always been really great at creating new series, as has Channel 4. But US network television, which is like where the majority of us get the majority of our television taste, less so in the streaming age, but it's like, you know, the standard for television, or was for a long time. They do not trust new shows anymore. They do not trust new stories, especially hour-long dramas or sci-fi fantasy genre shows. So like, you know, there's nothing on the CW right now that's not an adaptation, I think. for example, and, you know, we get our procedurals. They might be brand new. There are some easy things that it's good to do brand new. You know, there's one that I absolutely love. I think it's the best brand new property I've seen in years, which is Prodigal Son. The reason it's just come back for season two, the reason I'm not hyping it is because it was actually my hype in the episode we recorded and didn't release last year, but I might still release that. But I think it's an original IP that's had really good social media. It's really good. I mean, it's a good show, and the network believed it was worth pushing, even though it was creating the brand from scratch. And there are lots and lots of, you know, yeah, I guess like you get your new procedurals and you get your new comedies, and it just seems really difficult for networks to create a brand from scratch. And I keep thinking of what happened with Kings, which is like they had this whole branding ploy. They thought Kings was going to be the biggest show ever. And, I mean, that's kind of an original it's an adaptation of the Bible. So, like,
yeah, it's original, I guess.
It's close. But it's a brand. It's not a brand, like, it's not a direct adaptation. And it was something that they had this massive marketing campaign to create this new brand around Kings. Michael Green, the creator, like, laid this out a few years ago. And then, like, between the show getting greenlit and the show going to air, like, there was a massive reshuffle with the executives at the network, and, like, the new team did not care about it anymore. The marketing team all got thrown out. They had this great plan to create a good, really cool, like, new branded identity for this show. You know, it never got out the gate because the new guys in charge were like, no, we're not going to bother doing that. We're just going to let it flop. And I'm trying to think, like, of, like, you know, say, like, social media engagement, like fandom, how many properties are getting greenlit each year that are brand new and that the networks are trusting to create their own brand and be worth their time. I get why they're not doing it. I get why it's, like, out of the 5,000 television shows they have to pick from and the 5,000 options people have to watch, that the network, so, like, depending on advertising and all of that, they want stuff that people have a reason to tune into before they've even seen a second of footage, that they have something to spin it off. But it just makes me sad. Like, it just makes me sad that the original story ideas are not getting any chances. Like, again, I don't hate adaptations, but the proportion of original stories is, like, every year it's, like, going down so much. And, yeah, it just makes me kind of upset that people, because I've seen how well they've done it with Prodigal Son, and it works, it can be done. But, yeah, it just makes me sad to see that people are not trying, like, not taking chances on a new story. Yeah, like, the people in charge aren't taking chances on a new story. It never even gets to us. They're not trusting the audience to take a chance on a new story. And, yeah, it just makes me sad in a way, I think.
Yeah, and I think, like, people, they're trusting that people will tune in to complain and hopefully be surprised. So it's like, oh, I can't believe they're rebooting this show that I once loved.
God.
But
I think that happened with Charmed.
Yeah, so but then they're like guaranteeing that initial wave of views will be there because people want to tune into something to complain about it. Like, it's not as good as the original. They're changing this. I can't believe they changed that. And I feel like that is just something that has been a major cultural shift too. It's like, oh, I'm going to watch this to complain about it. I'm the same way. Every time Ryan Murphy gets a new show, I'm like, I'm going to watch this to complain about it. But his stuff does have original IP. I mean, season of American Horror Story is different. So, like, I'm choosing to complain about the creator and creative behind it, but I have to give it to him. He's getting original product greenlit.
His shows aside from, well, I guess The Prom was a kind of an adaptation, and then his, I guess, like, crime story is, like, based on a true story. He does make brand new IP.
Yeah.
But he's also a brand. in himself. Like exactly. That's a bit like he has gotten the chance to make original IP because he is the Ryan Murphy, and he has proven that we are going to look at Ryan Murphy's new shows and mm-hmm. Shonda's new shows and stuff like that. Like it is. I don't love his original content. I love that he's making original content. I do actually quite like, I liked Hollywood and I think The Politician is genius. But, yeah, he is the brand in that case. It's like with the new, we're going to check it out because it's Ryan Murphy. Whereas, like, the Prodigal Son creators, I've never fucking heard of them in my life. I don't know. Like, Karen, is there anything, can you, like, think of anything like this? Like, is there anything? Because I put this on Twitter and people were really struggling. Like, it's like, again, like.
Yeah, I saw your tweets and I was trying to rack my brain too. And
yeah.
I had such trouble coming up with stuff. Like, even Into the Badlands, which is mm-hmm. a very different, very kind of original, unique show, mm-hmm. is based on a story. It's based on Journey to the West, which is, it's not like a direct adaptation of it, but like, a lot of the beats and a lot of inspiration is drawn from something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of things that I like are adaptations, which again, I also love adaptations.
It's not a bad thing. It's just the proportion.
I think the issue is we like, there are so many reboots these days, which is hilarious because wait till you guys hear what my hype is, but there are so many reboots these days. And I think those can land very well given what they decide to do with them. And because they can kind of make those stories for a new generation, like, you know, Brendan Fraser's The Mummy. It's not the first time The Mummy was made into a movie, but look how much we love those movies.
Yeah.
And so it can be done very well and it can be done differently that it feels like it's fresh and new. I think when people have been complaining about reboots for a very long time because the box office is overrun with them. I think when people stop going to see the reboots is when we're going to see more original IP surge. Yeah. But I honestly, I do not know if that will ever happen.
Yeah. Again, it's not. And like, again, film, you know, you get a kind of, you know, it's almost easier. I mean, I don't make film. So like, I'm sorry if I'm offending any indie filmmakers, but it's almost easier to get like an indie film off the ground. You just go and you make it and you put it out yourself. It's kind of almost like self-publishing. Mm-hmm. Like you can just make a film and then be like, hey, do you want to show my film? TV is not like that. Obviously TV is the most like corporate structure for creating, and it just, the proportion just hit me. And it's like, even in the last, like I'd even say like 2 years or 3 years of seeing like the new stuff that gets greenlit or the stuff that gets canceled after one season, it's like every year it's less. And I was looking at the CW lineup and I think that like, cause like Supernatural finished and Supernatural was an original IP. And I was looking, I don't think they have any original IPs anymore. All American is original. That one is, and it's doing like okay, I guess. But genre, like superhero stuff and horror stuff and like paranormal stuff, fantasy, those are always adaptations. Like no one's bringing an original fantasy show straight to screen. Oh, Carnival Row on Amazon, that was an original that took the guy 13 years to get it greenlit. He was the first ever script on the first ever blacklist, if you guys know what the blacklist is, like the best scripts that were not produced. His Carnival Row script was the first script on the first blacklist, and it took him between then and 2019 to get that show made because it was an original fantasy IP and no one trusted it. Again, I love adaptations. I get a lot out of them. It just makes me sad that there is no trust from the people who have the power to help new stories. There's no trust in them and no value for them in helping new stories. It really shocked me, like the level that it's dropped, like even, yeah, within the last few years. And it's very clear to see that, like, the worst culprit is American network TV. And then, like, even some streamers, but, you know, it's, other places are more willing to give it a go, but American network TV. And like, I get it. I get that it's a really, really hard market to, like, you need something. You need to give yourself a fighting chance. But I don't know, it really hit me the other week. I don't know, maybe because a Prodigal Son came back or whatever. Do you guys have a favorite original IP that you're like something that you're currently watching, currently airing?
Gosh, I had so much trouble when I saw your tweets coming up with anything that I didn't end up responding, but I did see somebody had named The Good Place. And The Good Place is, you guys know me in comedies. We don't always get along, but The Good Place is one of the best television shows I've seen in my entire life. Yeah,
for sure.
I just drank that up.
Yeah, and it was amazing, and it's kind of interesting to me that, like, that was, again, like I said, half-hour comedies, they're usually original. It's kind of hard to make an adaptation into that. But The Good Place is almost like it got away with doing the extreme stuff it did in, like, the fantasy genre and the kind of, like, drama genre and the emotional genre because it got off the ground as a half-hour comedy. Like, it got the chance to really stretch because of, like, where it fit into the cycle of what they wanted to greenlight. You know, if he'd sold that as like a 40-minute fantasy drama, it would have not got greenlit. You know, like the same concept of like the heaven and the points and the bad place and the emotional stakes of the characters. I don't know. It's just, The Good Place is obviously a great example, but even that's like 5 years ago. And it's just every year it's getting less. I'm currently watching Leverage, which I think is actually a really great, I mean, it's a total procedural. And again, procedurals are kind of an easy thing to hook people. Really like that as an original property. And that's coming back. Like, it's not rebooting. It's just getting a, what do you call it when the same show comes back? Like, what did you call it for Gilmore Girls? So that's having a revival. Obviously there's trust in the revival because of the original brand, but the original brand was on, like, what do you call those networks that aren't the main networks that are, I don't know if they're cable or not, but like USA, is that a commercial network or is that a cable network?
It's cable. Okay. I mean, it's not like, so there's like premium cable, which is like HBO, Stars.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But like CBS, USA, TNT, TBS, those are all like just cable TV.
Yeah.
Like, well, second tier.
Yeah. Well, I think it was on one of those. So again, like there's the divide of network is where it's just dying. Obviously Prodigal Son, like I said, and it's really hard to think of any others that I've watched. Anyway, never mind. I just hope that more people are able to pull off what Fox has pulled off with Prodigal Son in terms of, like, really capturing the audience and building a fan base, you know, social media, real keen obsession over the course of one season of a brand new show. It can be done, so I hope that it continues to be done. But, yeah, last couple of years I've just, like, seen barely anything come out that's new. And, yeah, it just made me sad. That being said, both Karen and I have hypes that are to do with a adaptation or a brand, which is fine. It's, again, like, it's fine. There's no issue with the concept of adaptations. Like, they're just kind of a victim of my complaints. So, Karen, do you want to tell us about your hype for this week, this episode?
Yes, I would. My hype... My hype is Mortal Kombat 2021. It's hitting HBO Max in April. I am so excited. I think that anybody who knows me knows that I love Mortal Kombat unapologetically. I love the video games. I love the original movie. And they have been talking about doing another Mortal Kombat movie for years, for like a decade at this point. And I really wasn't sure that it was getting made until last year, the year before, when they really started rolling out production on it. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I'm really excited for a lot of different reasons. I think Mortal Kombat is just, it's a really cool property. At this point, there's like, I don't know, 11 or 12 like main video games. Like, this is one of the biggest franchises across multimedia, like, ever to be made. There's so much to go on here. And there's a lot of lore and stuff that they can bring into this movie. Of course, I love any good fight scenes and great choreography and stuff like that. James Wan is going to be a producer on this movie. And the guy who's directing it, this will be his directorial debut. So we don't really know what he's bringing to it. But if they were going to hand him this, then I imagine he has something good in his back pocket for it. The main character is going to be Louis Tan, who I love. He was on Into the Badlands. He was great on that. He did Woo Assassins, which I didn't love, not because of him or the fighting or anything. The story just wasn't completely there for me. But he was Shatterstar in Deadpool 2. He was in Iron Fist. He's done a couple other random things. His father was a national martial arts champion and got into Hollywood and started doing stunts and then started doing like his own directorial stuff. And so Lewis grew up in Hollywood on movie sets. He's trained his whole life. Like, he knows how to fight in real life. He knows how to do all of the stunts. He does them himself. If you're going to hand anyone the reins to Mortal Kombat, it's going to be him. And I'm so excited. I hope it's good. The way that they're talking about it is really exciting. They haven't given us a trailer yet, but there's been like one little clip shown and a bunch of pictures, and it's going to be a lot about like blood, not only in like the fighting scenes, but the legacy of blood and like family legacy and that sort of thing. I think the story is going to be there. I think the action is going to be there. I just gotta wait till April now.
This is like a total reboot. Like, it's not related to the other movies that you loved.
So the original Mortal Kombat movie, which was the highest grossing video game adaptation for like 25 years until I think Rampage came around or Detective Pikachu.
Those are two very different movies.
They knocked it off. It's peak as the winner there. But, you know, Mortal Kombat, the original movie, did not commercially do very well. It became a cult classic. But it was the best video game adaptation for like 25 years. And they did a second movie, which failed miserably and is not that great. And the original, they were supposed to do three movies, and that third movie just never got off the ground. It ended up like somebody went bankrupt, and then like, I don't know, something happened. So this is, they've decided instead of doing the third movie, they're going to reboot it with like a new kind of story. The guy that Louis Tan plays is an original character that they made up.
Oh, he's not one of the gaming.
Right. But you'll meet a lot of, like, you'll meet Raiden and Liu Kang and Sonya and, like, a lot of the people from the video games and everything. So you're kind of dropping an original character into an already existing world. And I think it's going to be really exciting.
And what does your friend and mine, Lyndon Ashby, think of this movie? Do you know?
I don't know. Johnny Cage, as far as I know, isn't going to be in the movie. So it's not like they've, you know, replaced him or anything, which obviously they would have to. But I think that, I don't know. I don't know if he said anything yet about it. I really wanted him to have some sort of cameo or something. I think that would be so cool.
Well, I saw they filmed it in Australia, and I don't know if they filmed it during the pandemic or if it was the year before that. But if it was like during the pandemic, they probably didn't fly him out to Australia for a cameo. Yeah. But maybe. Maybe the next one. I'm happy for you. And is this something that was meant to get a cinema release, but that was like Warner Brothers changed it for?
Yeah, COVID? I mean, this was supposed to be a pretty major feature. So probably, but honestly, I'm not that mad about being able to see it on HBO Max because I do like going to the movie theater. I do, but I'm still kind of afraid to. And if I can watch this, you know, four times in a row in the comfort of my own home, then I'm going to do it.
Okay. Well, I wish you luck with that.
I'm very excited for you. I probably won't watch it, but I'm very excited for you.
I might watch it. I like things.
Last time I made Brittany watch a movie, she wasn't too happy with me, so.
What movie was that?
Tremors. My all-time favorite. Oh, so I finally watched the seventh Tremors movie. I bought it the day that it came out and took a little while to watch it. And
Tremors it's not one of the best.
Guys. It might be done.
No, it's going to reboot it.
I think it was done. Well, it before wasn't. The seventh movie.
<It wasn't. laughs> They rode that train all the way to the station.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I'm going to do my hype next because it's also about an adaptation / brand. And it is actually Marvel's Disney Plus series, WandaVision, which came out last week with the first two episodes. And then this weekend, the third episode came out. And, yeah, it's one of the most interesting TV shows I've ever seen, really, so far. It's a half-hour comedy featuring Wanda and Vision as a married couple. It's set, we don't really know when it's set except for the fact that it's probably after Avengers Endgame. The last we saw Wanda and Vision in the MCU was in Infinity War when he made her kill him to destroy the Mind Stone for Thanos, and then Thanos was like, I'm just going to undo that and I'm going to kill him again and make you watch. And so she was very traumatized, and then she got the snap and he was dead, and she came back in the snap, the unsnapping, and did some magic but didn't really have any plot in Endgame. This is meant to be like, this is their first Disney Plus series, and they've got all of these ones lined up that were meant to come out, and this is meant to be a really big deal. It's meant to be kind of a partner to Doctor Strange and the Mansion of Mysteries or House of Horrors or whatever the hell they're making for him. That's like
18 line title.
It's like a very, that's meant to be like a very psychedelic horror kind of movie that I assume is about like mind fuckery. And it's also meant to tie to the next Spider-Man movie. So Doctor Strange, Spider-Man and WandaVision are meant to be like a trilogy, with this being the first. So I assume they're going to be revealing some big stuff about the state of the world after the MCU, and that Wanda is, you know, a big part of that with, you know, she's one of the most powerful people in the MCU as the Scarlet Witch. But the concept that we open straight up to in is this 50s sitcom, and they're married, you know, it's a farcical, you know, I think the first episode was based on, oh, they said somewhere like each episode they based on like a specific sitcom from a specific era, really. And I can't, the first episode is the Dick Van Dyke Show. The second episode is Bewitched. And the third episode is kind of like I can't remember, but it goes like 50s, 60s, 70s. And then there's going to be like an 80s, 90s and 2000s episode of like sitcoms. They're in this town. It's like sitcom plot. You know, a bit of a farce about their, you know, he's a robot, she's a witch, and they hide it and they try to pass. And, you know, he has his Paul Bettany face and his red face, and she's the housewife, and mysterious things happen. And it's like really cute and really funny, but obviously there's more to it than that. And there's this, you know, we know this is like wrong. And there's tiny little clues in terms of the advertisements that are shown in the middle of each episode, and like little things that, you know, it starts in black and white, little things that are flashing in color, some symbols involved so far, like SWORD, S-W-O-R-D, which is like in the comics, like a new division of SHIELD. And then there's like Hydra symbols, mentions of like Strucker, who is the Hydra agent that had Wanda and Pietro in captive in Age of Ultron. So we know this is like a fake world, basically. And I just love it because, you know, I love the MCU. I really do. And, you know, I've loved theorizing about what's going to happen in the next movie, but I really love theorizing about stuff week to week. Like, I love being like, what's going to happen about television in a week to week model. And so because this is such a mystery of like, what the hell are we seeing? What's the twist? That element combined with the MCU characters you know, and Wanda is someone I really like. I think Elizabeth Olsen is one of the best actors in the MCU and mm-hmm. one of the most passionate members of the cast. Like, she's a real nerd and she's really funny, and like, she's just, they're both doing so well in this, like, in the sitcom, like, era stuff. And then the sitcom plots stand alone as, like, genuinely good sitcom episodes as well, which Brittany, I think, has, like, the expertise in. And, yeah, I just think it's, like, the most creative thing that the MCU has ever made. So, like, I'm really keen to find out what the twist is. You know, I'm really keen to read everyone's theories. And I just think it's so... It's like giving me an experience with this universe, this brand that I already care about, regardless of like things I did or didn't like in various other movies. And, you know, Scarlet Witch is a character who, like, super powerful, really great actress who, you know, didn't have her own movie and didn't have that much to do. Like, I really liked, you know, what we got of her in Captain America Civil War, actually, when she changed sides, like when her and Vision were getting together and then she changed sides. You know, but she needs more. They're basically giving her a 4.5-hour movie to explore what's likely either a product of her own imagining or some sort of weird prison. Like, we know, you know, without spoiling too much, like, you know, the kind of little tale and beginning of the episode, like, this, you know, people calling out to her. She's in a fake world that she needs to be extracted from. Why and how, we don't know. And it's, yeah, the creeping sensation of, like, we're enjoying this black and white sitcom episode while also, like, knowing that it's, like, deeply wrong. Like, the sort of the conflict of, like, loving it, like, laughing and ha-ha, with, like, knowing that it's so sinister is, like, very interesting to me. And I just think it's, like, the best thing that they've done, like, really, like, the most interesting and creative thing that they've done so far. But yeah, you guys have seen it, or Karen's seen 2 episodes. Brittany, mm-hmm. did you see the 3rd episode yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any thoughts on, I don't want to like spoil massive stuff, but like, yeah, there's a character that, again, a character that's in the town that they're in, who is a character that, if you follow the MCU news, you know she's not who she says she is, and she's like a pretty big deal, going to be like a big deal character in the future MCU. And even without knowing that, you know, you kind of instantly vibe that this character is a bit different to the rest of the townspeople. And Emma Caulfield from Buffy's in it. That was weird and funny.
Very weird.
And yeah, just, yeah, what do you guys think so far? Like, I know, Brittany, Vision is your main man, so.
Yeah, so this Vision happened to me by accident because I was rewatching all of the Thor, like, movies that Thor is in, and for that piece on Hypable 1,800 years ago, that really shaped my true love and passion for Thor. But as a byproduct of that, watching Age of Ultron again, just like Vision, I just love him so much. And watching Paul Bettany, you know, this, I think we've talked about this maybe just in like conversation over the years or something, but like Paul Bettany as an actor, like having him just like go unhinged is so fun to watch. And we reference A Knight's Tale a lot. And that role is just like that version of Paul Bettany's coming out in Vision. And it's very weird to watch, because Vision is just so straight-laced and he doesn't emote at all. And I think that having like watching like Vision in his like true form have emotion and like, you know, even just like the uptick of his mouth is like very jarring, but it's so good and so funny. I think the scene that I keep thinking about and just laughing at randomly throughout the days since I've seen it mm-hmm. is when they're having the dinner party in the first episode and Wanda's trying to get dinner ready in the kitchen and everything's going wrong and he's trying to entertain their guests with a song and he turns to the man and he's just like, they're singing Old MacDonald and he's looking for an animal name and he turns to his boss and the boss is just staring at him and doesn't say anything and Paul Bettany looks back and very quietly goes, pig, just like keeps the song going. And I think it's just, it was so hilarious and it's fun to watch, but then it's like so undercut with these terrifying like scenes.
Glitches, that, like the, yeah.
Just when they're like, when he's the boss in later in that episode is choking and they're just staring, like they can't do anything.
And the repeated, yeah.
Yeah. And there was a tweet from Saeed Jones and he said, part of the reason I like WandaVision is that even and especially when things seem funny and upbeat, shit is actually sad, scary, and high stakes, just like our lives right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Fair, but okay. It's just, it's very, it's very well done. And it, beyond the connection to the greater MCU, it's just a really, really well put together and acted series. These two, I cannot say enough about both of them. And as a pair, just the way they play off each other and themselves, it's, like it's, they don't even have to say anything. It's just all there.
Yeah. Her face is like just her eyes, like the, and again, like the makeup and like everything, like, you know, she could go and play like Samantha or something. Mm-hmm. Like she's got it. Like she's got the sitcom stuff down. And then, you know, Randall Park and Kat Dennings are both going to be in it later. Mm-hmm. So like in I guess like the real world, Randall Park was Jimmy Woo, Scott's parole guy, who was quite funny in Ant-Man. And obviously we know Kat as Darcy, but they were both picked as MCU. Like, you know, who can we pull into like this team of people, you know, in the real world? Apparently they were both pulled, you know, let's use her and him because they've both got sitcom experience as well, like Fresh Off the Boat and Two Broke Girls. And, yeah, so they're really leaning into something here. And, you know, I don't know if those characters are going to come into the town as in character or if they're going to stay behind the scenes. But it's really, just, and everything, like the set design, like every week the house changes to be like the era of those that sitcom. And it's just, it's huge. Like it's a huge production for like, it's so good to me. Karen, did you like it? Like, it's okay if you don't, but like, what did you think so far? Like it's, you know, I don't know if black and white sitcoms are your jam.
They are. I don't watch a ton of them, but you know, just growing up with my parents and like even my best friend, like I Love Lucy is one of her all-time favorite shows. So, you know, I've seen bits and pieces of that and I like that kind of, my dad instilled in me a respect for older television and older films and stuff like that. So I do enjoy this stuff a lot. I do really like it. I think the MCU moving forward, you know, they've made bank with the big blockbuster action series that they've done so far, but not that I'm getting bored of it because I will never be bored of explosions, but I think that it is very important for them to kind of make the ground shift under us a little bit more. They have to bring something new to the table to keep people on their toes. And they've done it a few times with like Guardians and with Ragnarok, where they've instilled a lot of comedy into these movies that are also very high stakes. And those different flavors have brought a lot more people into those movies. And those are some of people's favorite movies. Like Ragnarok is such an incredible film. And he has to, you know, explore a lot of really hard stuff with through comedy and everything like that. And I think that as an entity, the MCU is capable of pretty much doing whatever they want to. And so I'm so glad that they decided to go in this direction because once again, you know, we don't really know what to expect from this. I love that it's a very, the thing that I keep coming back to is like Stepford Wives, where on the surface it looks very clean and very wholesome, but you know something sinister is going on underneath. Like it's so wholesome, it feels wrong. And I really love that. Like I have been getting into horror a lot more lately, and not that I would really say that this is horror, but even like some of the elements that take you out of that wholesome sitcom vibe,
Like the bee guy.
Yeah, and put you in a world where, like, something's not right. Like, it's so jarring.
It's definitely, like, a psychological, like, thriller to it. It's just a slow burn one. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love the television model and, like, I mean, how many years? I've said this for so long about genre. I'm like, no, genre TV or, like, something like superhero, you know, the Marvel Universe, it doesn't mean that all the movies, like, have to be the same. Like, it doesn't mean they all have to be the origin story of a hero. Like, you have a world where these characters exist. You can make a medical procedural set in this world where superheroes exist. You can make a, like, they tried that one show that kind of failed that was like, I work at an insurance agency that that is like handling the damages from like superhero stuff. And actually The Boys on Amazon handles like that kind of stuff quite interestingly, among other things they do very strangely. But one thing like I like about The Boys, not that I've seen the whole thing, is they actually, it's a satire, but they actually do that kind of stuff, like the results of living in a world of superheroes. But MCU has so many characters we love, you know, we can make a show about like the home life of like someone. And, you know, we've seen the photos from Hawkeye, which literally looks like they're doing the Matt Fraction Hawkeye, which is not a superhero story at all. And I'm so excited for that, though. I'm really confused how they're going to, like, marry that Clint with the Clint's history in the MCU. So, but I have high hopes. I've always said that, like, what I most want is for these movies or shows to be about whatever a movie or show would be about, but just happening to be in a world where these people have powers. And, you know, this is obviously like a highly focused and special story, but it's not the traditional structure of like a superhero movie, is it? And I think that that, yeah, the week-to-week model and the freedom to do that kind of thing because the brand is really powerful is really, like, it's really good to me. That they are doing this. I really think it's brilliant. And I've seen a lot of people being like, wow, this is like my favorite MCU thing ever. And I did not expect that. So it's really cool. I'm very excited for the next episode. And yeah, just like theories as to what's going on is really cool.
Yeah. And just like setting the future for the MCU. I mean, literally right now, I think I told you guys at the top of the episode, not on tape, but Endgame is on mute on my TV right now. And literally it's Cap handing the shield over. So like, it just makes me excited. Like WandaVision makes me excited for like, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm excited for Loki. I would be excited for Loki if it had a $2 budget and just Tom Hiddleston sitting alone in a room somewhere. But I'm just excited for these series, and WandaVision is a good test of that because it did have characters that I was kind of invested in and wanted to see more of, but it went above and beyond that. And I have a little bit more faith in what they're going to be able to pull off.
Yeah. It definitely makes me super curious about like what, going on, like, is Vision still going to be dead at the end of this series? Like, is this all, like, are we watching, like, Paul Bettany as Vision? Legitimately, this is Vision. He has autonomy. Or is this Wanda's projection of him? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be alive at the end of the series? Is he going to, you know, how is this going to tie to those other movies, the Doctor Strange and Spider-Man? Like, obviously the end of Spider-Man Homecoming was also like very psychological and weird, and then revealed like Nick Fury's new project, you know, in space, and it's very confusing, and I'm enjoying being confused. Mm-hmm. It's also like so long since we've had any Marvel content, and I know that like people are mad that we're all slaves to like Disney being the owner of everything, but I don't care. I like it. They're such good actors, and I like getting invested in the stories. Brittany, do you want to go back to your hype, which is more related to your gripe than to adaptations?
Yeah, so my hype is, lately I've been having very bad insomnia. And that's not my hype. It's not about insomnia. But I've been, normally what I would do in instances like this is I would read and I'd fall asleep, but this has backfired immensely. So I finished reading a book a few weeks ago, and underneath my like recommended books was this series called the Like Us series. And it's a romance series written by twin sisters. And, you know, they publish on an Amazon model. They have tons and tons of books. And this particular series is something that like normally I'd be like, yeah, okay, never going to pick that up in a million years. It's about like these wealthy families and their bodyguards. And naturally, okay, they get together because it's a romance series. So the first book is called, the series is called the Like Us series. And
Like Us.
Yes. And so all of the titles have Like Us in it. A word and then the phrase Like
Us. Guys so, like us, people like us, that kind of stuff.
Well, the first one's called Damaged Like Us.
Oh, right.
So the first one, I was like, you know what? Gonna give it a shot. It's about one of the sons of this family and he falls in love with his bodyguard. And I was like, okay, let me just, I'll read just the first one. And the first review on Goodreads that comes up when I like mark it as, you know, I'm reading this is from Adiana. And she read this book 4 years, about like 3-4 years ago. And it is literally the perfect description of the series for me. And I am completely obsessed with the series. So I've read 5 books from the series in 10 days. They're all like 450 to 500 words. I'm obsessed with them. I can't put them down. And I've been reading like a book a night, but from the hours of like midnight to 4 or 5 a.m. Like not great. So, but Adiana's review from 2017 for the first book in this series is, listen, this isn't going to win any awards or anything, but it was a fun read anyway. And that is the perfect way to describe this series. It's not going to win any awards. It's not very well developed. These characters have like 5 to 6 traits each that are repeated over and over again. If you like were to command F certain phrases, they'd come up every chapter. But it is, I am obsessed with these, the first two characters that are focused on in the first book. And they, so they have 3 books that are dedicated to them. And then the 4th and 5th book change to another member of the family and their bodyguard, but that character is like the closest to the main character from the first book. So the 2 characters that I like are very heavily featured in the 4th and 5th book, which I just finished today. And the 6th book is the 2 characters from the first 3 books, their wedding. So I've been like, I'm obviously not going to sleep tonight because I have that book on deck. But I grew, like, got really used to the writing very quickly, and I was interested to see how these 2 authors would switch to writing, you know, a like, there are 2 female authors, and I was, like, kind of curious how they would write a straight couple, and it just wasn't good. Like, it just, the 4th and 5th books were not good. Like,
about at a all. Straight couple.
Yeah. They were just not good at all, but I'm glad that I read them because they had like key plot moments for the other 2. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep reading these and got through them. There's like a whole plot in the 5th book where they get snowed in Scotland for 32 days. And I'm like, that's not a thing. Like, you, no.
No, it's definitely not.
It's definitely not a thing. So, but whatever. I got through it today. It's fine. But the next book is back to the first 2 characters, their wedding. I don't think I'm going to read on after it because then it kind of switches to other characters who are not close to the characters who are now getting married. So I'm sort of like less invested. I think I say this now, but I think that I'm not going to be reading any further. But it's been great, a good time. It's not high stakes at all. They're very easy reads. I think that the 2 characters Maximoff and Farrow are just very great. And the best part, and the way I'm going to describe, I thought about this actually, like just randomly this afternoon, was like, the thing that's keeping me going is that in this book, the one I'm about to start about the wedding, is that it's, you know, it's a grumpy boy and a soft boy. The soft boy never thought he was going to get married, and the grumpy boy has been thinking about his wedding day for his whole life. So I'm just excited for that dynamic going into it. Like, so excited, because it's just, it's what I want. It's what I want to keep me going right now.
That is very cute. I'm glad that they are there for you.
They are. It's a good
balance. I've looked up the covers and they look trashy as hell.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't want to say anything bad because I am getting something out of them.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not something you want to be reading on the subway. So I mean, they're all on my Kindle.
It's not the issue, isn't like the, I don't care about the content of the book. Very bad books have very nice covers. It's just the covers of, like, look very extreme.
But, I also don't like when people are on covers of, like, characters that are not, like, I don't like even movie covers, but, like, don't put a person on a cover. Like, a real, like, a real model person.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just not into that.
I think I know what you mean, but I've just got a little bit concerned because I've seen the titles of the book, and one of them is Alphas Like Us.
Oh, and so the security guards are, like, ranked differently depending on who they protect. So, like, the Alphas protect a certain block of the families. The Epsilons protect another block of families. Okay,
so it's like a code name. It's not
a code
like,
name thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole fandom connotation that's very different. And I was like, is there something you're not saying about these books? But no.
No.
That's fine. That's fine.
No werewolves. There are no werewolves.
There's even a, I don't even want to go into it. Not that we have issues with werewolves, but there's a further connotation that I was curious if these people were leaning into. And
nope, I really
glad that they're not.
Yeah, I thought it might be about werewolves, to be honest, because I, you know, coming into the series, there's going to be, like, there's already, like, these are, like, one of those, like, writing duos who are producing, like, tons of books all the time, and they have, like, books about other branches of the family and flashback books about the parents and, like, all sorts of stuff.
So it's like a real, like, yeah, like a whole,
it's a
dynasty
lot. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, there's stuff that I'm not interested in, which is why I'm kind of glad I could cherry pick, like, and don't feel the need to go further, because I know it's going to diverge into the characters that I'm just like about. But I will say that when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, like, I read the description, but then I saw Alphas Like Us, and I was like, wait a minute, if this is going to take a turn, I'm not going to get invested. And so I read the synopsis of that book, and there's no werewolves, so it's okay.
Okay, that's fine. Oh, good. That sounds cute, though. I am glad they're there for you, and I hope the wedding is very beautiful.
I do, too.
Okay. Karen.
Yes.
Have you happened to got a two truths and a lie for us?
I do. I just want to clarify the rules.
Okay.
Three statements, two of which are true, one is a lie.
And we guess. Yeah. So to close up, yeah, we're going to do our game of two truths and a lie. And then we've got a question of the day for everyone to answer. And then we'll say goodbye. So, yeah, just quickly, we'll ask Karen to tell us her two truths and a lie. Three statements that can be, you know, related in whatever way or not related, just facts, you know, they can have a theme or not. Two are true, one is a lie. We guess which one is a lie.
Okay. This is mushroom themed because I love mushrooms.
Oh.
So here we go. Okay. All right. For Christmas, my dad sent me 4 mushroom themed canisters.
Mm-hmm.
I own no less than 4 mushroom grow kits, edible, legal mushrooms, just for clarification. And as I was going through my books, I found no less than 4 mushroom-themed books.
I actually want to say the books is a lie because I don't know if the good people of the publishing world know about you and mushrooms. Like if you're, I mean, you, of course, you could have purchased your own mushroom books, but you know, perhaps, I don't know. I mean, you live in an apartment. How many mushrooms can you grow? I'm just going to say the books. I don't know. I don't know what kind of books there are about mushrooms, but how about
Brittany? I was also leaning towards the books, mainly because I know you're still going through them. So there could be more, there could be less. You're just not sure of the final count yet.
Well, you guys know me very well. That is true. After 38 days lost in the U.S. postal system, I finally received the Christmas present from my dad, which was four mushroom-themed canisters. They're like, I think they're from the 70s or something. They're very cute. I'll probably end up posting a picture of them online. I do have four mushroom grow kits, one of them from my dad, one of three of them from Andrew from last year's, not last year's Christmas, but the Christmas before. I don't even know if they're still good. I have to do them. And yeah, I actually only found one book on mushrooms so far. It was a cookbook. It was like the Mushroom Lovers Cookbook or something like that, that my dad gave me a while ago. So
that's cool.
You are correct.
That's cool. Thank you.
Now,
we've got a question of the day, and I don't know if anyone's thought about this in advance. And it's actually from Brooke, who was obviously a big part of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and our good friend. And she came up with a brilliant question without having known my gripe. Like, this was like, she just asked this off the, maybe she was thinking of my Twitter. She just asked this and I'm like, yeah, we're using this one. I got a few questions from friends. This, I was like, this is the one, like, this is great. She said, what is your favorite piece of media you're glad they haven't adapted? So like, whether it's like a show they could reboot and haven't, or a book that you never want turned into it on the screen. Has anyone got one that like immediately comes to mind? Like never been changed from its original source. You know, it could be a podcast and you don't want it to be changed.
I actually go a little bit back and forth on this one. So maybe I'm cheating a little bit, but one of my favorite book series is the Merlin Saga by T.A. Barron. And they actually do have the rights to it and are turning it into a movie, but the last update was in 2019, and I honestly don't know if it's ever going to get off the floor. And I, sometimes I'm like, yes, I want to see this movie version. I want more people to find this book. I'm really excited about this. And other times I'm like, no, I just want to keep it for myself.
Yeah, I have a pretty strong one. Brittany, have you got one?
Well, so what I did was I stood in my apartment and I looked around and I'm like, well, everything's been adapted.
Yeah,
this is great. But the one book that I did see that's kind of on the top of a pile right now is Red, White, and Royal Blue. And I don't ever want to see it adapted.
Really?
I want it to live on the page forever and not be touched.
It's interesting because they definitely have it. They definitely have the rights to it, but I don't know. I don't know if you could capture it. That's an interesting one because that's one I think probably will happen, but I feel you a bit on that. I think it could be not what you want from it. I have issues with the protocol, the British Royal Family protocol stuff in that book anyway, and if the movie fucked that up, I'd be annoyed. Yeah. So I have like an old school one and then one I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like one came close and I was kind of glad that it didn't. One is like I've said before, like anything of Tamora Pierce, the Alana series especially, but like basically anything that she's ever written, that was like foundational. I feel like very possessive of it in like a crazy way. But it's more like I know that no matter what they do, it will be wrong for my head because it was foundational to me at a very young age. And, like, you know, there's just so much of it that I just can't. I think they could get stuff right, but I just don't feel like I feel deeply uncomfortable with the idea of, like, it not being what it is in my head. Really, 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 really strongly. And that had the rights and died, like that had the rights early, like back in the 90s or something. And I think she, the author was like, yeah, it was just something like no one really knew how to make. And they probably could figure out how to make it now. And I really don't want them to. The Raven cycle came very close. It had a green lit pilot that was written and then it got pulled. And I think when it got pulled, I was like, I think I'm relieved. Like that one has got, again, imagery and casting that I think it would be easier to get the Raven cycle right than the Tomorrow Pierce, but I'd still feel nervous about it. I think that so much of the Raven cycle will be lost in translation. Like there's a lot of internal monologuing that you could look at the scene, you could see what the character's seeing and look at the scene. They could film the scene perfectly, but not reading the words that they're going through in their mind while seeing it. It's like the Raven cycle, it very much depends on the words inside the people's heads. And so that's really the key for me with that one. Tomorrow Pierce is not really about the words inside the heads, though that's obviously an issue with any adaptation. It's more about the world building. So yeah, that would be my answer for those. Don't touch them.
Yeah. Raven cycle was up on my list too, because that's sitting on my coffee table currently. But
yeah.
I kind of had an inkling you might go there, so I was
I should have said, okay.
Then I saw Red, White, and Royal Blue, and I was like, don't touch that.
Yeah, my first instinct very much is always the Tomorrow Pierce stuff, and then I was like, oh, yeah, Raven Cycle, but that's okay. So that was a really great question and very topical. To close off, we will say goodbye with our traditional Not About the Weather haiku, which Brittany has prepared for us in the process of recording. So, Brittany, take it away.
Yes, of course. As the, you know, poet laureate of the Not Another Another Team podcast, which I've never been on, but about Not About the Weather. Please meet Cassie Quinn. Whisper of Bones comes out soon. Pre-order today. Wow. Aaron, I'm happy to professionally record that so you can pin tweet it.
I'll have him add it to the front cover of the book.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Brittany. And yeah, everyone should order the book, and hopefully you all enjoyed hanging out with us for a bit. So we'll see you guys later. So yeah, hopefully this is something that we can do more. Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 Oh, God, I can't believe we're going to talk about Mortal Kombat. Karen is coming back, and she's coming back in full form.
Obviously. Did you imagine anything else? You knew what you were getting into.
I had no idea.